This week we have Parshat Bahar. In Bahar, which more often than not we don't read by itself, but when we do read it by itself, it really does focus on a number of laws, and I think it's interesting looking at these laws independent of, first of all, of all the other laws in Vayikra, but secondly, you can compare the laws over here with the laws, for example, in Mishpatim. You can compare the laws with which are in Kitetze, which are other parshiot that has a great deal of laws. Over here, first of all, the starting point of the focus is agricultural. The agriculture, I mean, clearly in terms of the laws of Shemitah. But the other things which are tacked on are laws which are not the type of laws that, again, if you look at Mishpatim, it's a lot of laws when people do bad things. If you look in Kitetze as well, you have situations of people doing bad things, avoiding bad things, or implications of doing bad things, damages that they have to pay when they, again, do bad things. While, on the other hand, what we have over here in Bahar is not so much what happens when you do bad, but rather it's how to try to do good, which means, again, it's the basic distinction that we have articulated in Tehillim. You have Sur Meira v'Aseh Tov. So a lot of the laws are based upon Sur Meira, but Aseh Tov, do good, do the right thing, is in order to create more of an elevated society. And again, the context is something which we've spoken about before. It's important to keep in mind the context to help us understand next week's Parsha as well. And that is that at face value, what was supposed to happen is we get the laws at Har Sinai, and this is really the conclusion of getting the laws at Har Sinai, and the next step is supposed to be going into the land of Israel and creating this elevated society. Of course, something goes wrong along the way, and of course we end up being in the desert for 40 years, and therefore we have Sefer Bamidbar, and then we need a new book to prepare to go into the land, which is really Sefer Dvarim. Which means, in a sense, where we're up to right now is the Sefer Dvarim of Sefer Shemot, if that made no sense whatsoever, which means is that the preparation to going into the land is, in Dvarim it's much more extreme, because in Dvarim things have gone wrong. In Dvarim we have to deal with all of the bad things that happened in Bamidbar. And in over here, okay, there was one really bad thing, and that's the Chet Egel, and eventually the implications of that are going to lead us into a desert and for a very long time. But at this point, the Torah seems to be focusing on the going into the land, and therefore, for example, you have the Tochacha next week at the end of Vayikra, which, listen, be careful, don't mess up, which is parallel to the Tochacha, the rebuke that we have at the end of Dvarim, don't mess up. But over here, there is a much more optimistic formulation. And the optimistic formulation is, let's make a great society. That's really what this is. And moreover, again, we looked at the holidays last week in Amor. The focus on the holidays was, to a very great extent, the agricultural focus. Because, again, we're going into the land now, and the land is going to have this agricultural identity to it. So not only is there going to be an agricultural identity, which will then spill over in terms of the celebration of the holidays, that Shemitah then follows this in terms of, again, a focus on the agricultural laws. And then we learn a couple of things along the way. And again, you can just start looking and charting the different laws which are here. First of all, there is what I think we could call a whole aspect, and I'm trying to avoid the word charity, because I'm not convinced that charity is the exact word that should be used. But, if I were an Israeli rabbi who was far more with it than I am, then I would call this social justice. I'm also not convinced it's really social justice or not. It's a system which is created. Again, social justice would depend on what the justice is, which means it's not justice, it's something else. It's trying to create a society whereby, even though there are certain people who are the have-nots, also will be able to survive. And it's creating a society where the others are taken care of as well. And the various laws over here, you know, as we start looking at the first source, First of all, we have the idea of the Shemitah. And in this seventh year, all the land, it's not just that it lies fallow. It's not just that you don't work the land. It's not just that you don't plant new things, but things that grow are ownerless, which means something, again, this is a very bizarre concept. You own this land, but no, during the seventh year, you don't own this land. During the seventh year, God owns this land. And by virtue of God owning the land, now the produce which was produced by that land is not yours in terms of the financial windfall that would come from the things which grew on this land. Which means the issue is not so much, or not exclusively, that you can't work on the seventh year. It's this other side of things in terms of the ownerlessness of the land. When we continue and we get up to the 50th year, then we have an articulation of something which goes far beyond just taking care of the disenfranchised. Pasuk Yud here, V'kidashta tshat ha-chamishim shana ukratim dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveha. I mean, that's an unbelievable pronouncement. Again, apparently the pronouncement was good enough that it made it to the Liberty Bell, and freedom will ring out in the land. Kratum dror ba'aretz. This is about the Jubilee year, which means there's some kind of, again, expression of freedom. He tia l'chol l'chem v'shavtem ish elachuzato v'ish al mishpachto tashuvu. That there's also, I guess, for a computer generation, the best term that we can use is that this is a reset. This is when you reset the button and everything goes back to default settings. So over here, even though that over the 49 years, things have made all kinds of shifts and changes and adjustments, at this point, everything returns back to the way that it is, which is also an interesting statement. And this applies to the land as well. People who sold the land, which is, again, the next couple of verses also, people who sold the land fields return back to their rightful owner. Things keep going back, which means, why would somebody sell their land? Right? You'd sell your land because you need the money, which is, if you're living in an agricultural society and you're forced to sell your land, so that's obviously an indication of getting towards being impoverished, because now you no longer have that thing which will can take care of you. So then the understanding that the land returns back to its rightful owner is saying basically, you know, here is a situation where all bankruptcy situations are canceled at this point. And when you keep in mind in terms of the Shemitah, again, this other aspect of Shemitah, Shemitat Ksafim, that loans get canceled in this year, you start to realize this whole economic side of things is incredibly important. But again, it's not designed simply to create what I call social justice. It's much more than that. It's over here in order to try to help people start up again on a right foot. So we have this sense of a reset every 7 years. We have this set of a reset of every 50 years. It tells us, again, just we're skipping some things along the way. Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'lo tanu ish et amito v'yireitim lekecha k'ni Hashem, that one should make sure not to abuse their brothers, or their neighbors, as it were. And fear God, I am God. Ki yamuch achicha, that's Pasuk Kaf He. What does that mean, ki yamuch achicha? Yeah, what does it mean, ki yamuch achicha?
The status goes down.
If you look at the Targum Onkelos, if I'm not mistaken, if you look at the Targum Onkelos, if my memory serves me, the word Yamuch, he writes the word Misken. If you're wondering in the modern Hebrew where they got the word Misken from, it's the translation of the word Yamuch over here. Okay, so he's a Misken. So now, did that help you any? What is Misken was easier then. So what does that mean? Unfortunate for falls. V'chiyamuch achicha, umatayado imach, v'hichzakta bo, ger v'toshav, v'chai imach. When somebody starts to fall, you need to put out a hand and help him get up. Al tikach me'i, right, this is Pasuk Lamed Zayid now. Sorry, Pasuk Lamed Hey, similarly. Sorry, did I just skip? That if somebody runs into financial trouble, help him out, help him avoid getting into it, buy back his land, liberate his land for him, in order to make sure the person can hold on to their proper land. Moreover, I read Lamed Hey, V'chi Amucha Chichem Matayado Imach V'chazakta Bo Gevur Toshavacha Imach Lamed Vav Al Tikach Me'ito Neshech V'Tarbit. Don't take from him usury. Don't take from him interest. No, this could sound very funny. I mean, this would not fit into the Jew from literature. The Shylock, what? The moneylender. Because over here we're told very, very clearly that one is not allowed to lend money with interest. Of course, to Jews. And to non-Jews it's a mitzvah, right? Look, the problem was in the Middle Ages is that they didn't let us own land. They didn't let us work in certain fields. And they basically didn't give very much choices, so the Jews were able to work in money. But over here it's interesting to read, correct, that when it comes to a Jew, you all know that the law is that one is not allowed to lend with interest. What's interesting is the last couple of words, or what I would say the punctuation of this verse. Let's read it again. Al tikach mi'ito neshech v'tarbit v'yareitim elokecha. Again, fear God. This is not something which is permissible. V'chei achicha imach. And your brother shall live with you. V'chei achicha imach. Which means that just because somebody else is in a difficult financial situation, you are not permitted to take advantage of that. You should see it as if you're both in a difficult financial situation, because he, after all, is your brother. And therefore, again, the punctuation here is, or the way that it's being framed, is that your brother shall live with you. Et kaspacha lo titen lo b'neshech. And it goes on again. Why? Again, this is how you're going into the land, by creating something new, by creating a better type of society, by creating a society that's going to have all kinds of things built into it in order to help avoid people getting into difficult financial situations, and then in order to help them when they get into difficult financial situations in order to lift them up. And it goes on and it continues along this way, which is why I say this is not just about don't do bad things, don't do the kinds of things that can get you put in a Mishnah in Baba Kama, right? But rather, this is saying do good things, create a better society. Now, as I said, the phrase which impresses me here is the V'chei Achicha Imach. Which means your brother shall live with you, and once it's framed that way, he's your brother. So, you know, if your brother needs some money, you're going to say, sure, I'll give you money, but I want you to give me interest back. It's just completely inappropriate. It's good for strangers. It's good for people it's good if you're in the mafia. In the mafia, then it's very good. And you can even ask for a lot of money back, and you can have some guys that no necks break their legs afterwards, and just in case they don't pay you back. It's an old minhag. But what's interesting is what happens with this verse and how it's utilized. And I would even argue that this is the most famous application of this verse, which is the kind of application that I would call a lateral interpretation. When I say lateral, it's not it does not directly flow out of this, but it seems to have shifted. The ground seems to have shifted in this application. And that's the Gemara, which is found in source number 2. V'chei achicha imach. What do we do with this verse? V'chei michamach. It says Rabbi Yochanan, "Hai v'chei michamai avidle." What does he do with it? Miboyle lechedetanya. He does with it as is expressed in the following Braita. Braita says as follows: Shnayim shayu mahalchin b'derech. If there are two people traveling along the road, uviyad echad mehem kiton shamayim, and one of them has a flask of water, im shotim shnehem metim. If they both drink the water, they're both going to die. V'im shote echad mehem agi el yishuv. If one of them drinks the water, he's going to make it to civilization. Dorash ben Pitura, somebody by the name of ben Pitura, is Doresh. By the way, what is he Doresh? The Gemara is not 100% clear what he's Doresh. And he says the following, because a drasha generally means it's an exposition of a verse. So which verse is he being Doresh? We'll see this expressed a little bit clearer in a moment. Dorash ben Pitura, mutav sheyushu shneim v'yamutu. It's better for them the two of them to drink it, to share the water, and they both drink it, and even though they'll both die, a little collateral damage. Ba'al yir'eh echad mihem b'mitato chaveiro, and neither of them should see the death of their brother. Ad sheba Rabbi Akiva, that's also a very strange phrase. Ad sheba Rabbi Akiva, two Rabbi Akiva came around, Billy made, and he taught, v'chei achicha imach, your brother shall live with you, chayecha kodmin l'chayecha verecha. Your life takes precedence over the life of your friend. Now, just to be clear about something, there's a parallel source to this, which is found in the Sifra, which is in the next source, in 3, where it says, v'chayechichimach zu dorash ben Peturei, he, meaning ben Peturei, was basing himself on the verse, v'chayechichimach. The same way that Rabbi Akiva, I mean, over here we have two different opinions on what do you do with this verse, v'chayechichimach. The other thing which is added over here is, shneim shiuchul b'midbar. Over here it makes it a little bit clearer that the place that they're traveling is along a desert, v'ein biyad echad elokiton shomayim, im shotu echad magil yishuv, if one drinks it, he'll survive, he'll get out of the desert, v'im shotim oto shnayim, shnei emetim, but if they share it, they'll both die. Dorish ben Peturi, he taught the verse, v'cheyechichimach, yishtu shteim v'yamutu, they should both drink it and die, shenemar v'cheyechichimach, that your brother shall live with you. Omer lo Rabbi Akiva, v'cheyechichimach, Rabbi Akiva says to him, what are you talking about? Your brother shall live with you, chayecha kodman chayecha chaverecha. Your life takes precedence over your brother. So when we look at the Gemara in Bava Metzia together with the way that it's expressed in the Sifra, we come to the realization that both explaining the verse, the only problem is we don't understand how either of them are explaining the verse. What does the verse actually say? Your brother shall live with you. What does Ben Petura do with this verse? He understands this, that if when we have a difficult situation, push comes to shove, they should both die. Now, how do you take a verse that says, your brother shall live with you, and end up with two people dying? And on the other hand, Rabbi Akiva takes a verse that says, your brother shall live with you, and says, okay, therefore, your brother shall live with you, so you keep it and let him drop dead. So, when you look at how the two of them are using this verse, we recoil a little bit because it's not immediately clear how either one of them are making applications verse. I'm not saying this is impossible to understand. I'm just saying is that when you look at this first thing, this was not when we read this verse in Sefer Vayikra, when we read this verse in Parshat Bahar, and it says that your brother is having a difficult time, and then you give him money and you help him out. You didn't realize that, you know, this gets applied to a case where that either both die or he dies. And again, I'm just saying the application of this is not, that's what I'm saying. I said before, it's a lateral application of the verse and not what I would have called the immediate conclusion that one would have had when one looks at this particular verse in this particular context. One word, yeah. By the way, the best interpretation I've ever seen of this is I saw in one of the essays of Elie Wiesel, talking absolutely as a survivor, and it was an essay about Rabbi Akiva, and he wrote that your brother shall live with you, that those of us who survived end up living the lives of our brothers as well. We don't only live out. There's the guilt of the survivor, that we end up having then the obligation of living our lives and their lives and our brothers' lives and our mothers' lives and our cousins' lives and all of those who perished, we end up, that when you walk out of the desert, you live there. Isn't that beautiful? I searched to see where he got it from. I couldn't find anybody who gave that interpretation, and I think it's absolutely the best interpretation of it. I think that's clearly the case, and I think this is one of the strange examples where the Gemara is actually easier, or the verse is easier to understand in English than it is in Hebrew, because imach means with you. So apparently Ben Patur is focusing on the with and Rabbi Akiva is focusing on the you. So therefore, if the with ends up winning out, so it's together, you have to be together. So whatever is going to be the conclusion, so both of you need to go together, so it's the with. And Rabbi Akiva is focusing on the you. You take precedence, so therefore you need to survive. And the with is not as focused. But as I said, it's easier in English than in Hebrew, because in Hebrew it's the same word, v'chei achicha imach. Yeah, 100%. I told you. I think his interpretation is absolutely a wonderful interpretation. Of course, coming from where he's coming from, we understand that. Yeah.
You know, there seems like there's very fine, hair-thin nuances here.
Yes.
Because we have a Shiloh from the Holocaust, too, where people, one particular one I remember is where a father had an opportunity to save his son. He could sneak him out of the camp. But it meant, when they did a head count warning, 10 people died in the place.
Right.
So pause a second
over there. That kind of discussion was actually discussed earlier. There's a shach that discusses that well, commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. And my recollection was that if the Nazis or any, I mean, we have bad people in every generation, and there's like change the uniforms from one generation to the next. If the bad guy said, "We're going to kill 10 of you," and you know who the 11th is. The 11th is this person right over here. It's clearly identified number 11. And one of the 10 disappearings is going to cause the 11th to be killed. That would be a problem. But if the 11th person does not exist right now, which means it's a potential 11th person, in that situation it would be allowed. Which means you can cause the death of this particular person, which is a direct result of what you're doing. But if because you leave, they're going to pick somebody else, that's already no longer going to be your concern. And that there are many other applications I can give which are similar to this, but that would seem to be a distinction within the within the cases. I will say that if you experience 3 or 4 Yovels, it's a skula for having a long life. Anyway. Everybody. No. Two could be 51 years old. I mean, everybody's going for the red strings over here. Try to keep 3 ovals, and it's even better than the school of. Yeah, it's even better than the school of having 2 or 3 or 4 different birchot hachama. I mean, that's also good. 4 birchot hachama can also do a good job for you. Anyway, I will say that. Okay, two more things that came up along the way. One, there is a debate where Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, in a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, writes that Rabbi Akiva's approach is essentially one which is based upon utility. And therefore, he would articulate it, maybe not exactly the way that I said it, he would say that according to Rabbi Akiva, you are allowed to keep the water. Again, big difference, are you allowed or are you obligated? According to Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, for example, if you choose to give the water to somebody else, that would be okay. Which means, essentially, there are 4 possibilities when you're in this situation, correct? First possibility is to share the water. What's the result? When you share the water, 2 people die. Second possibility is to keep the water. If you keep the water, 1 lives and 1 dies. Third possibility is to give the water. If you give the water, then 1 lives and 1 dies. Fourth possibility, which you won't like as much, is the Romeo and Juliet possibility. And it's very romantic. And that is to pour out the water and then both people die. So I would say that let's first get rid of Romeo and Juliet. I mean, I don't mean by killing them, but let's get rid of them, because I don't even believe that Ben Patura would agree with that. And this is also somewhat of a debate what Ben Patura really believes. The Netziv, in his commentary to the She'iltot, stresses that Ben Patura's logic is... let me just pause mid-sentence. There is a little bit of a debate who this person is. The reality is, we don't know who he is. He was never mentioned any other place. And this could be one of the indications that there's a great deal of democracy dealing with Jewish learning. If somebody has a good opinion, that opinion gets mentioned. It gets mentioned 2,000 years later. We're still mentioning his opinion, even though it's a rejected opinion. Of course, people looking for intrigue will start suggesting that it's all kinds of people. I've even seen it suggested that maybe this is really Jesus. Ben Peture, he wanted to not obligate us from commandments. I think that this is somebody's fantasy and imagination has gotten the best of them.
No.
And therefore, it's turn the other cheek and love your neighbor and then so on and so forth. Well, you know what? We're going to come back to love your neighbor in a second. Love your neighbor as yourself is a very important verse. But over here, ultimately, what is the opinion of Ben Peture? So the She'ilta, so again, the Nitziv is, in coming to the She'ilta, writes that, and he has a proof for this from another Gemara in Adarim, that it's actually not dealing with immediate results, it's the eventual result. And the reason I would say that, what would Ben Peture say if there are two people in a hospital ward and they both need a heart? And somebody comes in and he's a good donor for two different people. Would Ben Peture say to cut the heart in half and give each person half the heart?
That's like the Romeo and Juliet.
No, I'm saying that here we got to a case of an absurdity. Would Ben Peture say, yes, you should cut it in half. Each person has only right to half the heart. But you all know that that's crazy because there's zero chance of surviving in such a case. Is what Ben Peture is really saying, okay, where there's life, there's hope, and let's at least,
as far as we can go.
Let's take it as far, right. But that's what the Nitziv says, that he wouldn't say something if there was going to be immediate death to two of them, but rather when there's chance of survival, even though we know logically that they're both not going to end up surviving. Rabbi Akiva is saying something based upon, it's result-oriented thinking, and Rabbi Akiva is saying that it's absurd for two people to die if one person can live, and let's try to save one life. And that's why Rabbi Yaakov Emden therefore understood, well, if the main thing is the result, what would Rabbi Akiva say in terms of giving it to somebody else? So that also somebody survives, so Rabbi Yaakov Emden therefore claims that he could give it to the other person. And rather what we have over here is not an chayecha kodmin as an obligation to keep it, but rather as a justification to keep it. If this is what you choose, this becomes now your decision. But again, you get to these Holocaust scenarios, the cases that you said, could somebody then turn to somebody, let's say, who's far younger and so on, and say, here, I would like you to take it. So according to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he would understand Rabbi Akiva saying, yes, they could do it, yeah.
The premise seems to be that one will survive, not that one could survive.
Well, it depends what they do with the water.
No, but it's not that Sumwandi has a better chance of surviving.
Over here, the case is, if they share the water, they will both die.
If they don't, if one takes it, he will survive.
If one takes it, correct. If one takes it, he will survive. Right. Okay, so let's now move on. On the other hand, and I already mentioned this verse, it's an important verse, one that we know, one that we're familiar with. In source number 4, Lo tikam velo titor b'nei amecha, v'haft l'recha k'moch ani Hashem. One should not take revenge, bear a grudge of the people in your nation. Rather, v'yahavta l'recha kamocha, you should love your neighbor as yourself, ani Hashem, I am God. Rashi, and this is a strange Rashi. Rashi writes, v'yahavta l'recha kamocha, omer Rabbi Akiva, zeklal gadol b'Torah. Rabbi Akiva said this is the most important principle in the Torah. Now, of course, Rashi could have stated this without bringing the authority's name. More often than not, when Rashi quotes ideas, he does not quote the name of the authority. Apparently, the fact that this is Rabbi Akiva is something which is significant. Take a look at source number 12, which is the Ramban's commentary to this pasuk. V'tam v'yahavt l'recha kamocha, haflaga, ki lo yikabel lev ha'adam, she'ahov et chaveiro ka'avato et nafsho. What does haflaga mean in this context?
Exaggeration.
It's an exaggeration because a person's heart will not really allow them to love their neighbor or their friend as they love themselves or their own life. The Ramban is saying, I know you can decide if this is realistic, or if you can decide if this is sad, or if this is... As I said, this is how it is. He says it's an exaggeration. Love your neighbor as yourself, exaggeration. Why? because a person is not going to love someone else like they love themselves. Va'od shekfar bar Rabbi Akiva li mein chayecha kod min chayecha verecha. Rabbi Akiva already taught that your life takes precedence over your friend's life. Now, this juxtaposition of the Ramban is very significant. And by the way, I would have expected more people to point it out than this Ramban, is to say, Rabbi Akiva famously says, love your neighbor as yourself, the most important thing in the Torah. Right? It's so important. But when push comes to shove, you take precedence. So now, how exactly do we go about reconciling these two positions, which I'm not ready to say they contradict one another, but I would say that the flavor of each one is somewhat different. So in the sense that when we read this, love your neighbor as yourself, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. This is completely beautiful, elevated teaching, how we need, this is the principle of Judaism, love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, it's the principle of Judaism, unless you're stuck, and then take care of number one, which again is at face value a very strange comment coming from the exact same person, coming from the exact same Rabbi Akiva. And then the suspicion comes, and this is a haunting suspicion. The suspicion comes, and it's very hard for us to know the sequence of when he taught these various things. Did he teach them together? Did he teach them separately? But of course the question is, what one's students end up hearing. Correct? As educators, are we responsible for what we say or for what people hear? What's the... What? I mean, the students are responsible when it comes to a final what we say, but what we say is, I'm not saying more often than not, but it's very often it may not have been understood, it might have been processed, not have been... But people sometimes take messages out. And over here, as I said, this is a very haunting thought when we look at, again, the famous Gemara, which has to do absolutely with right now, this time of year, source 13, Rabbi Akiva Omer Lamad Talmud Torah B'Yalduto. If you learn Torah when you were young, you mold Torah B'Ziknuto, learn Torah when you're older. Hayulu Tamidim B'Yalduto. If you had students when you were young, you Tamidim B'Ziknuto. You should have students when you're older. Shenemar B'Bok Yizorezar Achav V'Gomer. And it's the rest of the verse, which is important over here. Don't rest in the evening. Amru was said, Shnei Masar Elef Zugim Talmidim Ayul Rabbi Akiva, 12,000 students, Migevet Ad Antiparis, stretching across Judea. V'kula metu b'perek achad, and they all died during one juncture. B'bnei shelo nogu kovod zel hazeh, because they did not treat one another with honor.
That's more ironic than the other contradictions.
It's more, well, the question is, this may be more ironic. The question is, first of all, the question is, what's the sequence over here? Did Rabbi Akiva say, Chayecha Kodman, your life takes precedence, and the students here, bottom line, you got to know, Chayecha Kodman, my life takes precedence, and if my life takes precedence, so then what's the unfortunate implication of that? That somebody else's life doesn't take precedence, and if the other life doesn't take precedence, so then I end up, again, and here again, there could be gradations, but I end up either not respecting or stepping upon or people who are my colleagues because I am most important. So again, what did the students hear? So first of all, let's be honest. I don't think that I or anyone else has any ability of necessarily reconstructing the proper sequence of when these things were said or when things were taught. I will point out to you that we have a couple of Gemaras that do indicate that Rabbi Akiva's students were less than exemplary in terms of their treatment of one another.
They were horrendous. The stories I'm going to tell
you, all of them. There aren't so many. There aren't so many. So you'll have to show me where they all are. I'll show you a couple of them. In source number 14, and by the way, the Gemara over here continues to say that when did they die? They died between Pesach and Atzeret, right? Between Pesach and Shavuot, which clearly is somehow connected to the mourning on the Omer. Yativ Rabbi Tarfun v'kakashalei ma bin kodum la Omer la kodum shnei alechem. Over here, Rabbi Tar, there's a Mishnah that talked ironically about the Omer, about something about a comparison between the Korban Omer and the and the Shtei Alechem. We will not go into detail. Amr lefan of Yehuda ben Nechemya, lo imamarta kodem la Omer shekin lo hutar mechlelo etzel hedyod, tomar kodem la Shtei Alechem shutar mechlelo etzel hedyod. So this rabbi asked this question of Rabbi Tarfon. Shatak Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon didn't know what to say. By the way, that's very often a phrase in the Gemara, shatak. More often than not, shatak is indicated that the guy is stumped. Every now and then they say shatak. He had an answer, but he didn't give it. Over here it seems to be that he stumped. Sahavu panov shrub Yehuda ben Nechemya. Yehuda ben Nechemya, his face glows that he stumped his rabbi. He's glowing. He's got a big smile on his face. Omelo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says to him, Yehuda. So it seems like the relationship here is that this is a student of Rabbi Akiva. Because it's Rabbi Akiva talking to the student saying, Yehuda, Sahavu ponecha shishaftet zaken. Your face is glowing that you stumped the elderly rabbi. Rabbi Tarfon's an old man at the time. Tamhani im tarich yamim. I would be shocked if you ever become an old person. Okay. By the way, this is not the Rabbi Akiva that you you are familiar with. Amr of Yehuda Rabbi Eli, Oto Haperik Prasa Pesachaya. This story took place around 2 weeks before Passover. Kisha Aliti. By the way, that's Purim. Kisha Aliti La Atzeret. When I was Ola Larega, when I came back for Chag Hashavuot, Shaalti Acharav. I asked Yehuda Ben Nechemya Heichanu. Where is he? But Omrili, they said to me, Niftar V'Halachlo. He died. So over here you have a student of Rabbi Akiva, not behaving very nicely, and dying between Pesach and Shavuot. Now, I suspect that some of you are aware that there's a whole other approach that one can take to the students of Rabbi Akiva, including Bar Kochva and the whole thing. I'm not touching that at all today. Other occasions we could touch that. Not at all today. The beauty of this particular case is that here is a student of Rabbi Akiva not behaving properly between Pesach and Shavuot. The problem with this is you'd have to say that now this was multiplied by 24,000 times, which is a little more difficult. A second Gemara where we also see the misbehavior, lo kacha yama'ase, didn't once happen, but tamid echad mitamid Rabbi Akiva shechola, he got sick, lo nechnasu chachamim levakro, no one came to visit him. V'nechnas Rabbi Akiva levakro, Rabbi Akiva himself had to come and visit this fellow who was sick, uveshvil shekibdu v'ribtzu lefanav chaya. And once Rabbi Akiva came in, either he personally, or because he came in and others, decided to come in and to clean up the place, and so on. Amalo Rebbe hachiatani. He said that you've given me life. Yatzir b'kiva darish. Kol mi she'in mevaker cholim ke'ilu shofich damim. Whoever doesn't visit the sick is as if they spilled blood. I'm not aware of more stories about Rabbi Akiva's students not behaving properly. If you are aware of more, then by all means send me an email, show me more gemarot. But over here we have a couple of stories, specifically students of Rabbi Akiva, who we see a lack of camaraderie. We see a lack of what we would call, the best word in English for this is menschlichkeit. And it is somewhat disappointing. If you take a look, at source 21, Kiditani, we learned in a Braita, this is Gemara in Kiddushin, Shimon ha'amsuni, va'amur le Nechemya ha'amsuni, ha'yadorish kol etin shebitorah. He was dorish every time it said the word et, which is an impossible word to translate into English. He would show what we derive from that. Kevin Shagia la et Hashem alakechatira, you should have fear of the Lord your God. Piresh, he stopped. He said, I don't know what to add. What do I add to God? You can't add anything to God. Amulo Tamidav, he said, Rebbe, call etin shadarashta matiela. What about your whole endeavor till this point? Amulahem, Keshem Shekibalti Ischar al Drisha, just like I've been rewarded for the drashot I gave, Kach Kibalti al Haprisha. I should also be rewarded for stopping. Right? Many rabbis who give drashot should have this attitude. Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva. By the way, it's a very similar phrase. Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva, as we saw before. Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva. Until Rabbi Akiva came around, the limed and taught, et Hashem Elokecha Tira, that you should fear the Lord your God, lirabot tamidei chachamim. that what can you add to God? You can add Talmidei Chachamim, which means that just like you should have awe and reverence of God, who gives us divine, the rabbis who are the people that God subcontracts out to, and they're the ones who share divine thoughts with us, and therefore one should also have awe and reverence towards them. But again, what's interesting, Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva is the same exact phrase that we saw when he was discussing with Ben Petura. The Sefer HaMakneh, over here, source 22, this is Rav Pinchas Levi Horowitz. We see that Rabbi Akiva's students were punished for not treating one another with respect. That's when Rabbi Akiva came and taught. That you also need to treat Talmidei Chachamim with on reverence. So he is saying that Rabbi Akiva came and taught this as a result of the death of Rabbi Akiva. As I said, I don't know any evidence to know how one describes or decides what the sequence was, but over here, he decided this. Although I'm going to go back and say again, I think that the phrase over here, Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva, is suspiciously similar to the phrase that we saw in discussion with Ben Petura. So maybe, and there he says Chayecha Kodman, so maybe there really is an intrinsic relationship between these two. I do want to point out a couple of more things, Rabbi Akiva, that will help us. Because again, if we're a little bit more cynical, and you know, some of you were polite and said it's ironic, right? Do I say at the end of the day that Rabbi Akiva failed? Okay. Although, do we say that Rabbi Akiva failed in the sense that all of these students, what happened to them happened to them? And had they had a better teacher, maybe something else would have happened. I do want to point something out, which I think is interesting and important in terms of Rabbi Akiva himself. Source 17 is a famous Gemara in Ketuvot. This is the one that Ben Kalba Savua's daughter spots this shepherd who works for her father, Rabbi Akiva Raya de Ben Kalba Savua Hava. Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd for a very wealthy man known as Ben Kalba Savua. Chazite Barte, his daughter, Kalba Savua's daughter, spotted Rabbi Akiva. She saw him. And she, what did she see? To have a tznia. What does tznia mean? That tsanua, he was modest. Uma'ale. What does ma'ale mean? He was very refined. Above. He was ignorant, but he was very modest and very refined. Ma'ale means superior in terms of character traits and so on. Amrile, she said to him, Imikadshena, if I were to marry you, Lech Azalt Lebe Rav, would you go and learn? And the rest is history. Okay? Although I will mention that the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva are only mentioned in one other Gemara, other than the Gemara that they died. The only Gemara is the continuation of this Gemara in Ketuvot. And there it says that he came back after 12 years, and he's about to walk in the door, and he overhears someone saying to her that she's basically a fool, she's like a living widow, she doesn't have a husband because he's been away for so long. And she says, if it's up to me, then he would stay another 12 years. So he turns around and goes. Of course, the question is, why didn't he at least walk in the house? But okay, he goes for another. And at the end of 24 years, it says he returns with 24,000 students. And when he walks in, then it says that he comes into the town with these 24,000 followers. And his wife, who is dressed in rags and so on, her father had disinherited her. His wife comes over and tries to get through and then grabs his ankles and whatever. And the students, it says, start pushing her away. So by the way, that's the only other story we have about the students of Rabbi Akiva that I know of the 24,000, that start pushing this old lady away. But of course, it's inappropriate. How can you let this old lady go and start hugging your rabbi? And that's the context that Rabbi Akiva makes the famous statement that every rabbi who ever writes a book puts in the introduction, where he says, leave her alone, because everything that I have and everything that you have is all in her merit. But again, one has to ask oneself the question, which Rebbe Akiva did they see? Again, she sees this man who's modest and superior and so on, but here's Rebbe Akiva, who they never sat around his Shabbos table and never heard him sing Eshet Chayel to his wife, and maybe they see a certain view of Rebbe Akiva by never seeing this other side of him. So I'm just saying it's interesting that the 24,000 students are mentioned dying, the 24,000 students are mentioned over here by pushing away his wife, and maybe there's some kind of a correlation. Tosfot, though, asks a stronger question. There's a famous Gemara, actually not so famous, this one, the other one was famous. There is a Gemara in Source 16, Amar Rebbe Akiva, and this gets his students very upset. Actually, his students think he doesn't behave properly over here, and he should be more refined when he speaks. Amar Rebbe Akiva, Kishayiti Ama Aretz, back in the day when I was Ama Aretz, Amarti, I would say, Mi Yitain Li Talmud Chacham V'Anashchenu Kichamor. If anybody would let me get my hands on a Talmud Chacham, I'd bite him like a donkey. Amru lo Talmidav, his students said to him, Rebbe, Amar Kekelev, at least say like a dog. It's also been Kalva Savu, it's also interesting. Like a dog. Amar lehem no. Zeno sheikh v'shover etzem, when a donkey bites you, he breaks your bones. V'zeno sheikh v'eino shover etzem. When a dog bites you, he only takes a piece of flesh. He doesn't break your bones. So Tosfot, back in the Gemara Ketuvot, back where Rabbi Akiva's wife, right, Kalva Savu's daughter, looks at him and sees that he's so refined and superior and modest, Tosfot asks in Source 17, Rabbi Akiva raid him in Kalva Savu Yahava Chazit. Sorry, that's the Gemara. Tosfot 18. V'hada Amar be'elu Ovrim, but it says in the Gemara in Psachim, Amar Rabbi Akiva Shiti Amar Aris Yiti Omer Mi Tainli Tamad Chach V'Nashchenu Kechamor Mashma De'lo Hava Ma'ale. It sounds like he wasn't so refined. He wasn't so nice. Rabbi Akiva is saying, I would take a bite out of I break the bones of Talmidei Chachamim. Tosfot gives two answers which are not mutually exclusive. Ikla Meimar, you can say, Dehatam Lav Mishum Shayas Sone Talmidei Chachamim. It's not so much that he hated them. Ela Mishum Shehayos Sover Shemitga'aim Al Amei Ha'aretz B'bnei Toratan. It's that V'hayu Talmidei Chachamim Sonim Otam. His objection to Talmidei Chachamim was a moral objection, because he thought they were arrogant, and he thought they hated the ignorant, because they thought they were better, because they learnt a little bit. And also there's technical laws in terms of Tum and Tahara, Bigdei Am Aretz Midras, the Purushim, Avu Mikol Makom Shomer Mitzvot Hayom. Rabbeinu Tam says something remarkable here. And by the way, this goes against all the legends and the stories that go afterwards. He says Rabbi Akiva was not a Baal Tshuva. For all you who thought Rabbi Akiva was a Baal Tshuva, Rabbeinu Tam just said he was not a Baal Tshuva. Rabbeinu Tam just now wrote he was always a Shomer Torah U'Mitzvot. But he was an Am Haaretz, which is ignorant. And he was an Am Haaretz by choice. The bumper sticker on his car said, I am an Am Haaretz by choice. I don't want to be one of those rabbis. Why did he not want to be a rabbi? Because he thought that they were arrogant, and he thought that they had bad midot. And because he had good midot, he did not want to go to yeshiva. One second. That is a remarkable statement over here by Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is saying Rabbi Akiva doesn't hate them, but Rabbi Akiva says, I would take a bite out of them if I could. I would break their bones because they need to grow. They need lessons. They need to become more decent people. That's what Rabbeinu Tam said over here. Now, he goes, because otherwise you have a problem. How could his wife look at him and see what a nice, refined, moral, ethical person when he wants to go and kill people or break their bones? He says, no, it's not a contradiction. He wants to break their bones because of their lack of decency. There is a Gemara which actually, according to at least one authority, describes Rabbi Akiva before he became a Talmud Chacham. It's a Gemara in Shabbat, which of course never mentions Rabbi Akiva by name. It's Source 19. Tanu Rabbanan, Hadanet Chaver L'Kaf Zchut, Danan Oto L'Zchut. If you judge other people favorably, they'll judge you favorably. Umaase be'odem echad. Once upon a time there was a man. Shiarad migalil, who came down Megillah Elyon, he came down from the Galil. V'niskar eitzo bala bayit echad b'darom shalosh shanim. And he learned by somebody in the south for 3 years. He worked by somebody by the south for 3 years. Erev Yom Kippur amarlo, after 3 years, ten li schari, give me my wages. Ve'elech va'azunat ishti uvonai. And I'll go and I'll take care of my children and my wife and my children. Amarlo ein li ma'ot. He says, I have no cash. Amarli, tenli, perot. He says, give me some fruit. Amarli, ainli, I don't have any. Tenli, karka, give me some land. Ainli, I don't have. Tenli, behima, give me, you know, pay me through with animal. Ainli. Tenli, kikarim, he goes, give me uksatot, give me some kind of linens. Ainli, I don't have. Hifshil kelav la'acharav, he goes, he puts his backpack on his back. Valach laveto, bepache ruah nefesh. And he goes back home, a little depressed. Work for 3 years, you don't get paid. La'acha haregel, after the holiday, natal balabait scharo biado, he takes the money. V'imo maso shlosha chamarim, and he takes 3 donkeys with him. Echad shel ma'achal, one with food. V'achad shel mishteh, one of drink. V'achad shel minei begadim, and one with clothing. V'alach lo leveto, and he goes to this other guy's house. Acher shalchlu v'shatu v'natan lo scharo, after they ate and they drank, and he gave him his wages. Amar lo, he says, v'shashamarti ten li schari, when I said give you my money, v'amarti ein li ma'ot, I said I have no money, b'mecha shetani, what did you accuse me of in your mind? Amar, suspect me of. Amarta shema pramaktia bizol nizdam in lacha. Maybe you're short on funds because you had a business opportunity and you don't have any cash right now. V'lakachta bahen. Uvishosh amarta li tenli behema, v'amarti enli behema, b'mecha chashadatani. What do you suspect me of when I said that I have no animals? Amarti shema muskeret biyadacharim. Maybe you rented them out. When I said, Len, what do you suspect me of? I thought, maybe you've rented that out as well. What did you think? He said, maybe you didn't take Truman Ma'aser from them yet. When I said, I don't have any lemons, what do you suspect me of? Maybe you dedicated things to heaven. Amarti lo ha'avoda, I swear by the Beit HaMikdash, kach haya, every word that you said is correct. Hiderti konechasai bishvil Hurkanis b'ni, because my son Hurkanis, which is the only name in the whole story, shelo asak b'torah, because he didn't want to learn. Ukishabati eitzel chaveri b'derom, when I met up with the other rabbis in the south, hitiruli kol nederai, they canceled my vow. Va'ata kishem shedantani l'schut, hamakom yadinot cha l'schut. Just as you judge me favorably, God should judge you favorably. In the She'iltot, which is one of the most ancient rabbinic sources we have, it's a post-Talmudic source which collects Talmudic sources and organizes them in terms of Parshat HaShavua. Over here in the She'iltot, Parshat Shemot, it writes, and it gives us the names of the characters in the story. Ma'asa Rabbi Akiva, Hivshil, source 20, Hivshil, Kelav la'acharav alach lebeto pachei nefesh ma'asar Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus himtinat sheyotza chag haSukkot, which means it adds in the names over here. Now Lezer ben Hurkanus was the easier name to add in because it says that a guy's son is named Hurkanus, and we actually know from the Gemara in Sanhedrin Samachet that Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus has a father named Hurkanus and also has a son named Hurkanus. We also know that later on, at some point, when Rabbi Kiva starts to learn, he's going to learn from the same guy, Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus. Nonetheless, the Nitziv, in his commentary to the She'ilto, writes, here is Rabbi Akiva when he's still in Am Haaretz. He says, this is it. Here we got a picture of Rabbi Akiva when he's still in Am Haaretz, before he learned anything, before he knew anything. But what do you then see? You see that Rabbi Akiva, as an Am Haaretz, was a very, very decent human being. And here's really then the tragedy of Rabbi Akiva. The tragedy of Rabbi Akiva is that he was a very decent person, and he was so decent he never wanted to go to yeshiva. I hope that you laughed when I said that the first and second and third time. It's a very sad statement that he felt that these people are arrogant and they are self-serving, and they think that they have an exaggerated sense of entitlement, and he did not want to be one of them. Quite the opposite. He wanted to break their bones. Why? Because he was so decent. His wife then convinces him that if you go and learn, you're not going to be any less decent. If you go and learn, you just become more knowledgeable. Rabbi Akiva agrees. And he goes and he learns. And he comes back with students who go beating up the same wife that told him that he should go learn anyway. Again, that's the tragedy of Rabbi Akiva. He tries, and so on, and he's teaching them, and you should fear God, and you should fear other rabbis, and he goes on and on and on, trying to educate them. Nonetheless, it's possible that one phrase that he says, you know, your life comes first, you know, that's it. You know, that could be one which they can follow. Yeah, my life comes first. I'm more important, and so on. And by the way, I want to stress something. That I think that the application of Rabbi Akiva, Chayecha Kodmin, your life takes precedence, I think should be a direct extension of the laws of lending money. Right? That's the source over here. When do you lend somebody money? When you're not going to be destitute when you lend them money. If you lend somebody else money, now you're going to have to start borrowing money from other people, then you don't lend money. V'chei achicha imach, your brother shall live with you, which means only if you can live. If you're going to be self-destructing because of this, which means Rabbi Akiva is saying, love your neighbor as yourself, and so on, yes, to the point of self-destruction. Because you still have to love yourself. Because if you love yourself, then you're going to love others as well. But you can't do it to the point of self-destruction. Which means Rabbi Akiva's Chayecha Kodmin is actually a perfect extension. Even though I said it's a lateral application, it's a perfect extension from a law of lending money. I do want to read one other source that we have of Rabbi Akiva and his students, which is parallel to the Gemara that we saw in Yevamot, source 23, where it's underlined. Shneimasar elav zugim zugot tamidim ayol Rabbi Akiva migevet aranti paris ukulu meitu beperek achad. Okay, it's almost word for word. He had 12,000 pairs of students stretched out from these two places in the old world at one period. Lama shahaita einehem tsara. Elu be'elu. So it's slightly different the way it says it here, because their eyes literally were narrow. They were to one another. Uvisof he imid shiv'ah. The other Gemara, he had five. Over here it says he had seven. Rav Meir, Rav Yehud, Rav Yosef, Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar ben Shemur, Rav Yochanan san, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Ve'ita am Rav Yehud, Rav Nechemia, Rav Meir, Rav Yosef, Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Rav Chanini ben Chachniai, Rav Yochanan Sandler. Amud lahem, Rabbi Akiva says to them, Banai, my children, Harishonim lometu elishaita inem tsara bitorah, that they were selfish in terms of their learning Torah. Elu be'elu, one to the other. Tnuda atchem shelota asukim asayim, make sure you do not behave like they do. Amdu umalu kol eret Yisrael Torah. They went and they filled up the entire land of Israel with Torah. What it's stressing in this source is that it's not only in general things, like maybe I would have said before from the Gemara we saw in the Durham, they didn't visit one another when he was sick. He said that they were selfish in terms of their learning Torah, that they didn't see themselves as colleagues, they saw themselves as competitors. They didn't see themselves where one's learning can help make the other one better, rather each one was selfish within the learning. And maybe we could be even a little sharper right now, that type of learning is not sustainable. That type of Torah not just is not sustainable, that's not the type of Torah that we need. The type of Torah that we need is a type of Torah which is an unselfish Torah, a type of Torah which really does take the real teachings of Rabbi Akiva, and the real teachings of Rabbi Akiva really is Ravta Chamocha. And even if I have to end up saying, push comes to shove, Chayecha Kodmin, that your life takes precedence, that's only in the case where you will literally be self-destructed. In a case of self-destruction, then Rabbi Akiva said, if you don't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? But again, that's going to be the case, which is the most extreme case possibly. Once again, is it possible that students hear what they want to hear and internalize what they want to internalize? And the tragedy that I'm saying, therefore, is Rabbi Akiva is somebody who never wanted to go to yeshiva. He never wanted to learn. He never wanted to be with rabbis. He never liked them. And he ended up raising a whole bunch of them, despite everything that he says to them. He can't get through to these first couple, the first 24,000 students. But at the end, Rabbi Akiva gets new students, five or seven new students. And by the way, these are the students that the Mishnah is based on, the Tosefta is based on, the Sifra, the Sifri, the Mechilta. All of these students are the ones who end up spreading Torah in all over Israel, and to a very great extent, the Torah Shebaal Peh that we have today really is based on Rabbi Akiva's new students, the ones who want to go and spread Torah, the ones who want to learn it, the ones who want to share it, and they're not the kinds of people who are hurting other people's experiments, like in medical school, where there's, because there's competition, who's going to get the postdoc and who's going to get the appointment, and so on. Those kinds of students are the ones who don't end up surviving. The reality, which has been expressed by Reddy the Magen Avraham and the Aruch HaShulchan, and later Professor Sperber wrote about this, is that the reality is it's the Crusades and the pogroms and the blood libels which always came during this period of time, but it's a happy period of time from the Torah. So how do you take a happy period of time? But as I said, that's much later. All that is later.